The 3HL, coming up this afternoon from 3 to 6 p.m. Now it's time for Blaine and Mickey on 104.5 The Zone.
Let's do this. Blaine and Mickey coming at you on Tuesday, January 26th. It is January 26th, man. We've almost run through a whole month of 2021. Man, I was writing stuff down this morning. Are you kidding me? This month has just flown by. I wonder if it's because there's all this stuff going on.
Yeah, with the balls. Yeah, of course. That has to be the reason it makes our days and weeks and even this month fly by. Yeah, man. My wife was like, yeah, you know, the mortgage is due next week. Oh, man, already? It's here? I thought I was dead. So that's how fast they're going. Yeah, man. So hopefully something will get rectified here by the end of the week. Then it'll be, boring or something. I doubt it.
It's funny you say that, because that made me feel some kind of a way where you're talking about, hey, the mortgage is due next week. I can remember you finally get out on your own and you get your job and you can finally, like, you're paying your own bills, right? You're toting your own note. And I can tell you, man, this is so funny because you said that. I immediately went back to this time in my life. You get your bills in the mail. You try to keep them all stacked up, you know, young, single at that point, most people. And, man, you'd write those checks out. You put them in the envelope. You buy your stamps. You put that stamp on there. Man, you go put those things in the mailbox. I don't know why, but that made me feel so good to do that. It made me feel it's like so grown up. Like, look at me, man.
Yeah.
You know, I'm making this happen. I'm doing it. I'm paying my bills. I don't know. I wrote those checks with so much pride, and then people would remind me, hey, man, that's your money. I'm like, I know, but – you know, I got to live somewhere. I got to have lights on. I got to have all this stuff. Got to pay my phone bill when you had a phone hooked up to your house somewhere.
Oh, my.
But I'm telling you, man, I felt some kind of way paying those bills.
Well, you know what, Mickey? You just said that. We had no intention of talking about that. But I think that's a lost art now. And we're going to instill those things in our kids, because now everybody's going online to pay bills when they start getting that responsibility. I think responsibilities are kind of on the wayside. And now, and especially in this generation of kids of all this computers and phones and everything else, you know, I think life is easy. And I think that leads into athletes too, by the way. As soon as something is not working right, let's go somewhere else. So it's kind of interesting to see what happens here. As we saw Keyshawn Lawrence go to Oklahoma, will there be more defections, you know, with the easy route? They didn't get recruited by the coach or whoever they hire. So they say, hey, let's go now. Or is it a wait and see approach and say, you know what, I want to see what's happening. I want to fight through this adversity and see if I can prove something to the new coach, because I love UT. And that's what the fans should be thinking. They still love UT. They got to put their trust in the new AD. I love how it's all quiet and no chirping about, you know, all the rumors. We are coming up with them from, you know, big time reporters in the media or Football Scoop or what have you, but none of the noise behind all these leaks, which in previous connections to UT. Now it's all, you know, relevant stuff. I mean, and people are saying he haven't even mentioned those guys. PJ, like, oh, he didn't even interview him, you know? Yeah. So maybe they didn't want him. I'm just excited that no one knows anything and he's going about this process because he's securing who he is. And when he's making his decision, he's going, may not like it, may not have any experience, but we got to all support it and move on if you're a UT fan. I mean, it's as plain as day. If it's Sonny Dykes is the guy, let's see. Obviously, he knows something we don't know about Sonny Dykes. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, what has his record been over his time as a head coach? Mickey, I think you have that, right?
Yeah, Sonny Dykes, been a head coach at La Tech, at Cal, and at SMU. He's 63-59 as a head coach in those three stops.
Which is not overly impressive at the stop. But, you know, 63, he had a winning record. He's barely over 500. But so was Jeff Fisher. So, yeah, you know, he's putting his name out there everywhere he can. I think he wanted to be a candidate for Vanderbilt, and now UT, fishbone. You looking bad, bro. You looking kind of desperate. Yeah, you're creating your own market, which, hey, pat you on the back, but I think the game has moved on from Coach Fishbowl. And I think we need to look at some young and up-and-coming guys and see who they come up with.
Yeah, that's a tough thing for somebody like Coach Fisher, because in real-life terms, he's still a pretty young dude. you know? And I would imagine a guy like him, he wants that challenge. You know, he wants to coach a team, but you just got to find the right situation, you know, for those guys. It's, you just got to find the right situation if you still want to do it, if you want that grind every day.
Mm. I'm going to give an example. Hey, man, I love to grind and get back on that football field to cover Corey Davis or A.J. Brown. I love that challenge. Mm-hmm. But I'm too old and time has passed me. Yeah, that's sometimes you got to hit it, even for the coaches, because how it ended and defense doesn't win in this era. No experience in the college arena. No, I think that is a huge risk there. I'd go OCDC before I did that from the college ranks or even the pro ranks before I did that. People must not forget, as much as Fishbone did a great job, he was never a play caller on either side of the ball, even though his background was DC, even in my younger years when he became head coach. So he, yeah. And so all his guys he's going to hire, who is he going to hire? All NFL guys. Oh, so you think those old guys want to get out on that recruiting trail? Come on. No. Now. No, it's just not a good idea. Yeah, so that's kind of interesting. He's kind of put his name out there on different, you know, radio shows or what have you. So, yeah, unfortunately, that's to me, that's not even on the radar.
That recruiting thing, I can't describe to people, because I was never a coach, but I worked at a college. And I can remember, dude, I'll never forget this. We were in the locker room, and I say we because I worked there, and we had lost,
we.
Well, but I, you know, it's we, and I didn't play any games or coach in any games.
Yeah,
but
you worked for the university.
But yeah. I'm right there, and I'm in the locker room, and we had lost this game. And, dude, I'll never forget this. It was a big game, and we lost. It was a conference game. It was a close game. And, it, you know, I mean, you know what it is in the locker room after something like that. And I'll never forget this. Coach addresses the team. You can tell just how bad everybody's hurting. You work that hard. You're trying to win a conference championship. We had a good enough team to win a conference championship.
Mm-hmm.
And that dude walked out of he pushed the two doors open from the locker room. And he had to make one turn around the corner. And there were all these recruits and their families there, you know, because it's a big visit weekend. And I was walking right beside him. And that dude went from wiping tears out of his eyes, basically, to what's going on? I mean, he had to immediately change to meet with these recruits and their families. And I remember too, another thing, like we'd be on the road somewhere and we'd be loading gear onto the bus to, you know, to fly back to Memphis and then drive to Jonesboro. Oh my gosh. You have no idea what that ordeal was like. And I would see assistant coaches going the other direction. So finally one day I'm like, where are you guys going? And they said, we're going to rent a car, man. We got high schools to visit. They would leave Saturday night, get in some rental car, and just, if we had kids we were recruiting in that area, there they go. You know, stay in some hotel.
Non-stop.
Go see kids on Sunday, be in schools on Monday, and then had to be at practice by Monday afternoon. I mean, it never, ever, 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 ever stops for college. It doesn't for anybody, but that recruiting thing is, you have two A1 jobs. Number one is coaching and trying to win games. And number one is that recruiting. And number two, or 1A, is that recruiting piece. And they never stop either one of them.
Yeah. And, you know, now that they have the COVID-19, it's kind of helped them a little bit in that they're not ripping and running, but they don't get to see the kids face to face. So everything is by Zoom, or you got to watch their huddle video. And shoot, man, there's some guys that can look great on huddle. And then you get them on campus and you're going against some other elite players and go, uh-oh, he look kind of average now. So, yeah, so it's hurting everybody at this point. But, man, right now, as far as getting a coach and having different personalities, you just want a guy with high integrity and, you know, someone, as Ms. Plowman said, and I'm sure Boyd feels the same way, someone with high integrity but yet alone have a moral compass that puts them right where they need to be, and they'll eventually have success. So, yeah, you know, as much as I was, you know, wanted someone with experience, I think I was rolling the dice, not against Sonny Dykes or anything, but I'd roll the dice a little bit with Tony Elliott if it was possible.
Yeah. Well, Brent Doherty tweeted earlier this morning, he heard Tony Elliott has reached out to potential assistant coaches to gauge their interest level if he were to get the coaching job. So obviously it's something he's thinking about if he's reaching out to people. Chris Lowe said yesterday on 3HL, he thought Tony Elliott and Sonny Dykes are candidates to watch. That's why we started the show today, talking about Sonny Dykes and Tony Elliott. Blaine also mentioned this, Key Lawrence going to transfer to Oklahoma. And you said some guys, you know, who are the guys you're going to stick it out? Well, Darnell Wright said on Instagram that he's staying in Knoxville. So you got one guy that's coming.
But that was a bunch of BS, though, there, Mickey. He never got in the portal.
Right.
So, I mean, what was the big humbug about him? That would sound like somebody seeking attention. I mean, if you didn't get in the portal, then where were you going? It's a process now. Yeah. So I think he was pulling people's chain, man, just messing with people. Real time. Well, it worked.
Yeah, yes, it did. We just mentioned his name on Blaine.
I'm like, no, you did. I did not.
Blaine, we are like, Blaine and Mickey. What? We got to jump out of here for a second. Greg Bishop jumps in with us on the other side.
My
of
cousin.
Illustrated. Mm-hmm. Blaine's cousin from Sports Illustrated. Next, he talks about the NFL. He writes about it for Sports Illustrated. It is Blaine and Mickey on 104.5 The Zone. Blaine and Mickey on 104.5 The Zone. Let's welcome in Greg Bishop. I mean, there's nothing like having two bishops on the show, Blaine Bishop and now his cousin Greg. Greg, welcome to the family reunion show, man. Good to have you.
Well, thank you for having me. And Blaine probably is a bit insulted by that, but I'll take the comparison.
You help our family name step it up a little bit with your knowledge and your educational background. So, yeah, man, I appreciate you having you on, cuz.
No worries at all. This will be a interview I remember forever, you know? So thanks, guys.
Greg Bishop from Sports Illustrated, our guest. So I wanted to start with this because anytime writers get something wrong, everybody tells them, you actually got the Super Bowl matchup correct. Right? You picked before the season, you got the Super Bowl matchup right.
That is correct, and I'm glad that somebody noticed. You know, I didn't hear anything from my bosses about my September choice of the Chiefs and the Bucks to make it to the Super Bowl. I even had the Bucks coming on late. I think I had them as the 7th seed, but I said they would have to go on the road. They would have to do some avenging. They would have to beat some great quarterbacks. And, you know, I think it's that old theory, right? A broken clock is right twice a day. And so, you know, take all wins when you can get them.
Who do you have actually winning between those two? Let's see if you can get it all the way right.
Yeah, I would still take the Chiefs, and I realize that I'm not exactly out on a limb there. I was in Kansas City this past weekend. I saw just sort of the demolition they put on at the Bills, who I think are a very good and emerging team with a lot of depth and a lot of good players on both sides of the ball. To see Mahomes and sort of the injury questions surrounding, you know, his concussion protocol, and to see him come out and play like that, and they just have so many weapons. I just think it would be a mistake to bet against him at any point in the next, I don't know, 10 years, you know, if they have a roster like this.
I'm with Greg Bishop, senior reporter for Sports Illustrated on Blaine and Mickey.
Yeah, Greg, I got half of that right. I had the Tampa Bay versus the Titans. Where did you have the Titans in this process of the playoffs and the Super Bowl? Did you have them make the playoffs?
I believe I had them in the playoffs, but if I'm wrong there, I apologize to whoever's going to look it up and make fun of me on Twitter. I like a lot of what they're doing, you know. You got a good quarterback. You have an amazing running back. I think Mike Vrabel is a very good coach. I think they're headed absolutely in the right direction. And to me, I think what we saw this year is the AFC is, you know, pretty stacked, that there are a lot of good teams, that, you know, there were several challengers just a level below the Chiefs. And I think they should be in the mix for a while here, too.
Yeah. Oh, no doubt about it. The Chiefs probably we're witnessing a dynasty in front of us. Is that going too far there, Greg Bishop from SI.com?
No, I don't think so at all. In fact, I wrote a piece on Tyrann Mathieu in September in which he told me that at last year's AFC Championship game, when they won to go to their first Super Bowl in 50 years, that he was on stage with Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce. And the thing that they talked about before they won their first Super Bowl was how they wanted to create a dynasty, how it was there. And then you saw Patrick Mahomes, you know, he signs this huge contract, but he builds in for the near term a lot of flexibility. Then they go out, they re-sign Travis Kelce, they locked down Chris Jones, amazing defensive tackle. I mean, this is a team whose window has just opened, and I think you're going to be looking at them as a contender for this trophy in the same way we looked at the Patriots forever. is going to be year in, year out. If Patrick Mahomes is healthy, I think they've got a chance for the foreseeable future.
Man, I'm not surprised Tom Brady, as I picked him as halfway right for the Super Bowl. But how crazy is it? Tom Brady's 43 and he's making it to a Super Bowl, looking younger than he did probably 10 years ago and playing that way. Or is this a statement that it was more Tom Brady than Belichick, or is it the other way around? Or is it anything at all to his time with the Patriots?
It's a really interesting question. Yeah, I should start by saying I'm 41. I woke up today with a sore neck. injury, you know? So I can't imagine like running away from these defenders the way he was last weekend. I actually was just talking to Tom House, his throwing coach, this morning. He said that he doesn't see barely any drop-off in terms of what Brady can do, in terms of the throws that he can make. You know, we have a story coming out next week that's sort of relevant here on the 10 years that Brady didn't win a Super Bowl, the sort of gap in New England. And a couple folks that I've talked to for that story believe that it was more Brady than Belichick. I think that there's a little bit of recency bias involved there, and that, like, Tom's back in the Super Bowl. The Patriots obviously had a rough season. But that's a little bit misleading because, you know, they've sold out for so many years to try to get there, and now they're going to have to reconfigure and rebuild. I would say that, like, neither person did not benefit from the other. You know, I think Tom absolutely benefited from Bill Belichick. I think Bill Belichick absolutely benefited from Tom Brady. But I think, to your point, I think what Tom's doing, what he's done, is special and unique. I mean, you're talking 10 Super Bowl appearances. I've only been to that many as a sports writer, roughly, and I didn't have to play to get into any of them. And I just think that we're going to look back at this as something not only without precedent, but just totally insane. When he's all said and done and the numbers are what they are and the rings are what they are, and even though I don't think they're going to win in Tampa in a couple weeks, imagine if he did, going through Brees, Rodgers, and Mahomes. I mean, that's just such an epic run, such an epic career. I honestly could see him hanging it up if that's what happened.
Well, with Greg Bishop with SI.com, senior writer for SI.com. Yes.
I know you got a little bit into the Titans, and yes, you did pick them to make the playoffs. I read all your picks earlier. You had the Titans in the playoffs. Nice. But what do you need to see from the Titans this offseason to believe that maybe they could go further in 2021 than they did this year and maybe have a shot to even try to dethrone those dreaded Kansas City Chiefs?
You know, to me, with them, it's just a matter of building depth. I like a lot of their young sort of skill position players. I think they could get better on both lines in terms of what they might be targeting in the draft. I think they play with a very sort of tough mindset, and I think bolstering that is good. You know, they run the ball. They now have wideouts, you know, that I think are, you know, really complementary to that process, and they have a quarterback who can sling it all over the field. And so that, to me, is the kind of team that I think is poised to take a step the way that Buffalo did this year, to really emerge as a true challenger, you know, for the conference. And, you know, their issue moving forward is going to be that there will still be the Chiefs and there will still be Patrick Mahomes, and Buffalo's still coming up and Baltimore still looks good. All of which is to say, I'm excited about the next couple of years. I think we're seeing the dawn of a new era in the NFL, especially at the quarterback position. I think it's really interesting because we've been through this long time with the Mannings and Brady and Rodgers and Roethlisberger, to see that moving in a new direction. And I think the Titans are in some ways emblematic of that trend, in that they are a younger team with a lot going in the right direction. And I think they're poised to be the kind of team that we're talking about this time of year, you know, for the foreseeable future as well.
You mentioned Rodgers is just part of that long time NFL royalty at quarterback and always with a team near the top. Man, things ended so ugly for their season on Sunday. And, you know, everybody's ending is ultimately ugly when you end in the playoffs. But it didn't really have anything good to say. You know, he talked about the field goal not being his call. So instantly, a lot of people are saying, well, he's just going to force his way out and get traded. It's a $31.5 million cap charge if they try to move on from him. I mean, do you think cooler heads are going to prevail there?
100%. And, you know, I've done a lot of cover stories at SI, and Aaron was one of them. And one thing that stood out to me about him is just his memory is long. You know, he's a guy that never forgets anything. He's happy to, like, talk trash to somebody who did something to him 15 years ago on a football field that that person wouldn't even remember. And I think some of what you saw after that game was he was not happy about the draft. You know, that was clear from the moment it happened. You know, could they have used another player with the pick they spent on Jordan Love? Would that have gotten past the Bucs? I think that's a fair sort of sentiment to at least examine. You know, obviously they had an incredible season. They were the top seed in their conference. There's a lot to like there. I also think that Matt LaFleur is a great coach. Now, he made a couple big mistakes on Sunday, you know, and I think that's part of growing into that role. But if I'm him, you know, I would come out right now and say, Aaron's not going anywhere. We will do everything we can to get this right. And then just run it back with, you know, the emergence of A.J. Dillon, the defense that's improving, the play of Jair Alexander, and the Rodgers, Devontae Adams. Like, that's a connection we saw this season that's as good as any in the NFL. And it would be a shame to take a really special year and break it up over not going for it on fourth down.
Greg Bishop on with us, senior reporter from Sports Illustrated on Blaine and Mickey.
Well, Greg, I want to ask you this question about just quarterbacks in general and where the money is and how that is kind of seems like give them leverage to actually, you know, want to be moved. Let's say Watson, Rodgers to Stafford. I mean, man, back in my day, which is a long time ago, that would be unheard of. And you just kind of ride it out and hopefully, you know, they do a better job of drafting and signing a free agent. Why has it gotten to this point where, you know, they don't look bad and that they want out? Like, why doesn't Aaron Rodgers, they were 13-3 just for the thought of you want to be moved, even if you didn't say that. I mean, it's okay at this point in time.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And I think there are a couple of things in play there. The first to me is just the sheer amount of money involved. You know, these guys have more leverage because they're so tied into these salary caps. And what we know is next year's salary cap is going to be lower because of the pandemic and the money flowing in. So it makes it really hard if a guy, you know, wants to, like, say, like Deshaun Watson wants to withhold his services, to have 25% of your cap not playing. Like, that would pretty much doom your whole season. The other thing I think that's interesting here in a way that we've seen sports evolve is that I think part of this is like the NBA effect. You know, we really saw guys in that league take control of their own stories, of their own careers, of their own destinations. I mean, you saw it recently again with James Harden going to the Nets. And I think what you're seeing is NFL players saying, look, you know, we don't have to be part of this same system in the way that it's been set up forever. We absolutely can take control of our own careers. You know, I covered the Jets when Darrell Revis was there, and he was one of the first guys that said, like, yeah, if you don't pay me what I'm worth, you know, I'm not going to play. And that kind of situation tends to reflect poorly on the player, but I understand where they're coming from. You know, Blaine, I think you know as well as anybody, if you have a bad year, they're going to come to you and want a discount. You know, they're going to want to change the contract in ways that benefit the team. They're going to want salary cap flexibility. I think anybody that's played in the NFL, you know, knows it's sort of tilted, but I think it's tilting more toward the players, and I don't have an issue with that. I think it's a long time coming. This is a, you know, $14 billion a year industry, and the guys that make it are guys like you that played in the NFL, and, you know, to me, like, you know, go get it. You know, you deserve it.
No doubt about it. They have more leverage than ever. And then you're probably going to get new contracts at worst case scenario with Aaron Rodgers' case, probably. We're on with Greg Bishop of SI.com, senior writer. I guess one more question for me, and that is talk a little bit about, I think you did a piece on Jack Easterby there with the Texans. It seems like there's always a lot of controversy around him. I guess give us a little history lesson on how he rose so fast and then why is it always so much noise around what he's doing?
Yeah, that's a good one. We've done two Easterby stories in the last couple of months. We had a follow-up out about a week ago if people are interested in checking it out. And, you know, the sort of Cliff Notes version is Jack was the team chaplain in Kansas City. He went to New England and became a character coach, really focused on performance. And then he went to Houston and basically took over football operations. So that's, you know, Brian Gang gets pushed out of general manager in 19. Bill O'Brien is fired in 2020 as the head coach. And eventually, you know, what our reporting bore out is that Jack became the only voice really in Cal McNair's ear. Now, there's not necessarily anything wrong with that until, you know, half of the organization feels fearful about their jobs. Deshaun Watson is unhappy with the direction of the team. We reported and stand by our reporting that he absolutely wants out of there. And so you're taking a guy who's a generational talent, you know, probably a top five player in the entire NFL, and you're making him unhappy based on the advice of someone who's not really done more than, like, win in New England, which, like, everybody won in New England from that time period. And so I think what you're seeing now is there was an expectation Jack might get pushed out, that they were going to go in a different direction as a coach. And one thing we reported in our last story is that Jack met with Cal McNair after the season's final game. They were the last two people to leave the stadium. Our understanding is that they prayed together over the direction of the franchise, and the next morning they were on a plane to New England to get Nick Caserio, who's Jack's longtime ally and close friend. So it looks like he survived, and I think, you know, if my mentions are any indication, what Texans fans are most upset about is that it looks like Cal chose Jack over Deshaun, which obviously would be an insane choice, you know, no matter who it would be.
We're on with Greg Bishop, senior writer for SI.com.
I wanted to ask you about this, Greg. I have gotten Sports Illustrated for basically my entire life. The monthly thing is still taking me some getting used to. But the cover story from this past month, the one that I've been reading over, was your story. And it's basically about how hard it is for teams to get back who lose the Super Bowl. And, you know, for Titans fans and for Blaine and for all of us, that's something that we all remember thinking, well, this is a great team. They got everything in place. We're going to go to the Super Bowl around here all the time. We didn't see it. You guys actually wrote about that. It's your story, cover story, in this month's edition of the magazine.
Yeah, you guys are all pointing out the best stuff. I should swap you in for my agents, you know. I got to tell them to do a little bit better job here. So, they wanted me to explore the idea of a Super Bowl hangover or curse. And ultimately, the conclusion we came to is that there's not one. But I think that there's pressure in playing in that game, and particularly in losing it, in terms of the next season. You know, some things I explore, like teams that try to go all in when they probably, you know, should have just let things be. Then there's the flip side of that, you know, teams that wanted to take another run and didn't make enough changes. Then there are, like, freakier things, like this year with the 49ers, who were moved out of their home stadium, who had $80 million worth of roster money land on IR, who dealt with COVID, who had, like, I think three, like, they lost Bosa, Garoppolo, and another Solomon Thomas in the same game to the same injury in New York. And so, you know, the idea, I think, like, is something Dan Quinn told me, which is just essentially that weird stuff tends to happen in the NFL, that it's hard to win in this league, and that basically we look at teams that lost the Super Bowl, like his Falcons, that, you know, obviously dropped that 28-3 lead, and we think that there's a curse or a hangover, when really it's more just that it's hard. It's hard to get back. Yeah. It's hard to win. It's hard to keep things together. It's hard to find the same chemistry again. And, you know, because these teams are in the Super Bowl, we put a greater spotlight on them.
All right, one last one on the way out, and this is just a strictly curious to get your thoughts. Phillip Rivers retiring. We looked at his stats. He's like fifth in all-time yards and fifth in touchdowns. And yet, if you look at social media, there are some, even amongst the national media, who say compiling stats doesn't make you a Hall of Famer. You know, that there's more to it. Curious to get your thoughts on the way out about Phillip Rivers.
Yeah, I mean, I don't vote for the Hall of Fame, but he would have my vote if I did. You know, I always kind of think it's silly when people say, like, Eli Manning was a better quarterback than Dan Marino. You know, and I don't mean that disrespectfully. To the guy, but, you know, like, I mean, Dan Marino was, like, one of the best players of his generation. And, you know, Blaine, you know this. I mean, like, it's hard to win the Super Bowl. You definitely don't do it by yourself. And so these things hinge on, like, a million things. Like, for Eli Manning, for instance, a guy caught a football well covered using his helmet. Like, I mean, and that makes him better than Dan Marino? I'll never, ever understand that kind of argument. I think winning is important. I think it should matter. Phillip Rivers won a lot of games. And, you know, the fact that he didn't win a Super Bowl, to me, isn't as relevant as he's a main part of this era when the NFL truly became, like, an aerial, you know, showcase, when passing became this huge thing, and he did it consistently for a long time on a lot of good teams, and that to me is more than enough to get him in.
Greg, good stuff, man. We need to make this happen again. You and Blaine, when you're at the family reunion, you know, sampling the different varieties, potato salad and everything going through the buffet line. You guys need to set up another interview and we'll have you back on the show again.
No doubt.
I can't wait, guys. Yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it, guys.
Greg Bishop, senior reporter, SI. He is at Greg Bishop, SI. Like I said, that cover story, really good. Blaine, that stuff you asked him about with the Texans, they went really deep in detail with that. They're still doing great work. I don't know how many of you still get the magazine like me, but Sports Illustrated is still doing really good work all over the place. And we'll have Greg on again soon. We'll take a break. I asked him about Aaron Rodgers and the trading thing and cooler heads are going to prevail. I'll tell you some of the financials if they tried to trade him and where that would be historically. It will blow your mind, Blaine. Prepare to have your mind blown. That's next. Blaine and Mickey, 104.5. Blaine and Mickey on 104.5 The Zone. Our guy JT, longtime producer for us. Our man David Reed just handling his business for us now. We appreciate David producing this show every day and keeping up with us and keeping us on track. JT tweeted something about running. Basically, he doesn't understand why anybody would run unless they were being chased.
Well, JT's humor on Twitter is pretty hilarious, as I mentioned last week. But this week, he's put, this one here fits the bill for a lot of people, I'm sure, David Reed and yourself included there, Ricky, is went for a run this morning. Awful idea. Why do you runners run? ? From here on, I declare to only run when being chased. Oh, man. Hey, man, Jay, go ahead.
The crazy thing is he's lost a middle schooler, without ever doing any exercise. That's the crazy thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I want to really be able to do that. He hasn't gave me the secret sauce yet. He's giving me bits and pieces.
The secret is no sauce. That's the problem. Yeah, the man hasn't he hasn't eaten a carb in 5 years.
Oh, man, I don't know if I can do it, but, man, I sure in the heck want to see if I'm disciplined. Because guess what? I'm tired of working out. I've worked out for a lifetime. So I want to just sit back and relax and lose weight without doing nothing. Like, it just shreds off me and just boom. I'm just talking about, like, losing 20 or 30 pounds or something, Just try to get back maybe to my high school weight. I don't know if anybody can accomplish that, but I got to reach for the stars, so at least I'll get halfway there. So that's what I'm thinking about.
Do you know what my high school weight was? Do you know what I weighed when I graduated high school?
I'm going to guess 150.
Oh, no, lower.
135?
Lower.
Oh, my.
I weighed 127 pounds when I graduated high school. 127. I was so skinny you could see through me.
I'm about to ask David Reed, what did you weigh when you graduated high school? I'll tell you mine. I'm in a minute, but
I can't remember. But I would say this: if I graduated when I was 120 pounds, I never would have made it past the fifth grade.
Hey, man. This is a true story of my little hometown.
I think I was a freshman in high school at 120, though, to be honest.
This is a true story. So I went to college after my first year. I weighed 133, and I stayed right about there till I got through college, maybe 145 or something. So the first job I get out of college, I had to travel. So I traveled for a year, and I came home, and I weighed like 168 pounds, which is which is about what I weigh now. It's the most I'd ever weighed. And I went home to this little hamburger stand. Like, you couldn't even eat in there. You just had to walk up and order in my hometown. And I walked up to the window, and the lady said, "Mickey Ryan, I haven't seen you in a long time." I said, "Yes, ma'am. I'm back home. I have this job traveling, but I'm, home to see my parents." And I said, "I was wanting to get a double cheeseburger." She said, "Why don't you just stick to the single?"
Oh, my.
As I had put on some weight, she recommended the single.
At 170, huh?
Let me tell you what I did, too. It's a true story. I said, "Good to see you." I turned around. I got back in my truck. I drove to my parents' house, and I went and ran. I didn't even live in town. We lived so far out. I just went and ran up and down some gravel roads. I lost 20 pounds in a month after that. I got back to my weight. That insulted me so much.
Oh, my. You should have kept to the single, man. Well, I weighed 175 when I graduated from high school. So, I played pretty much at 200 at the pros, and now I'm like 210. So that's
pretty good.
Yeah, so I'm trying to get, let's see me get down to the one something, the 199. Yeah, one something. I know I'm not, I'll look like I'm on, you know, some drugs or something if I got to 175 right now. But you know, that'd be like 40 pounds. I mean, good Lord, I don't know if I really want to do that, but I gotta shoot for that.
Well, JT,
I need to stop lifting weights because that puts on muscle for me, and it's just, oh my gosh, that it muscle weighs more than fat, so that's bad.
Well, you need to get fatter and lose some of that muscle.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm gonna use that.
That's how you lose some weight. It's just get fat. Just get fatter.
Just stop lifting weights. Okay.
Yes.
I think I'm gonna try that. See if it works for me, Mickey. I don't know if it'll work for me, but that seemed to work for you.
100%. Oh, I can't run anymore. Not even if somebody's chasing me. If it's a bear, I'm just like, hey man, you're gonna have to eat me. Because I can't get away from you. I can't run anymore. My knees and my feet are shot.
Well, they say you accomplish a lot more by walking anyway.
I walked over 2 miles a day. I'm still doing that. See, I'm back down to my 167. My too fat for the double weight. But
circling back now to walking. Aaron Rodgers talking about walking away. How the heck is he going to do that to them? And a 13-3, and then leaving him in that kind of cap situation. Because he could actually retire, huh, Mickey?
He could. Well, I mean, he could do anything. You know that dude's too competitive. He ain't going to retire. So Mike Jannetty of SpotTrack, he's going to be on with us tomorrow at 12:15. So we got 8 million questions to ask this dude. And if you've never heard him on, or if you have, trust me, you'll want to be listening tomorrow at 12:15. This is what he said. Trading Aaron Rodgers prior to March 19th, the Packers' dead cap hit would be $31.5 million this year.
Ruh-roh.
$31.5 million. Now, the team for the next three seasons would save $74 million, because obviously you're paying him a lot of money every year, but the dead cap hit would be $31.5 million. That would save them six, but they'd still take a $31.5 million. So, SpotTrack, Mike Jannetty put this out and said, if Rodgers was traded in early March, the $31.5 million dead cap hit to the Packers would be $10 million more than any team has ever taken on for a single player.
So they definitely are not trading him. That will not happen.
No, you can't trade him.
No way. No.
You can't eat $31.5 million.
How about this, man? You know what? I would probably give him an extension or redo his contract and make him feel a little bit better after the snafu by LaFleur and say, hey, does this make you a little bit better? I gave you million more this season. Do something. Because, they go nowhere. I love, he not ready yet. I ain't even seen him on the field. Is he on the depth chart?
I mean, no. $31.5 million. So, I mean, for anybody who thinks he's going somewhere, and LaFleur got asked about, you know, letting him get away, and he's like, we would never do that. LaFleur praised him and praised him and praised him some more. But I agree with you. Oh, Aaron Rodgers might respond better. I mean, like, thanks for saying nice stuff to me in a press conference, but how about showing me some love where it matters the most?
Mm-hmm. I would tell him to show me some Justin love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With the 10th pick or whatever it was, that was a good idea.
Think about what you could have gotten instead of him. Yeah. Think about how you could have helped the team. I mean,
I had this stat basically. I'm glad you brought that up. I'm gonna tell you this: two other guys played 16 years, I think, at quarterback with Green Bay. You historians out there, and I know you are one of them, Mickey. And then that was their last year.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. What year is this for old Aaron Rodgers with Green Bay?
I would guess 16.
Yeah. You better check on that. All Twitterverse, please check to make sure. And that was their last year with the Green Bay Packers.
Man.
I only heard that from Brett Favre. So if Brett Favre said that, I want to believe him. But he could have got it wrong because it was Brett Favre and Bart Starr.
Yeah. And by the way, people, look at Bart Starr. When you want to talk about guys playing for championships and winning championships, that dude won a bunch of championships, a bunch. And he didn't have, and people are like, well, he didn't throw for much. Well, they had Paul Hording and Jim Taylor. They had two Hall of Fame running backs. And in that era of football in the 60s, nobody in the NFL was throwing it. They were throwing it in the AFL. That's why guys like George Blanda, the Houston Oilers, had big numbers, but nobody in the NFL was chucking it around the yard at that time. They were handing it off to a bunch of guys who made the Hall of Fame as running backs. But Bart Starr, one of the ultimate winners in the history of the NFL, along with Tom Brady, who's going to play for another one. All right, second hour of the program coming up. Ryan Leaf is going to join us at 1:15. We'll talk quarterbacks with him. Heck, we can get into a bunch of stuff about quarterbacks with Ryan Leaf. Coach Mack also coming up in the 2 o'clock hour. So we're talking Titans, also keeping an eye on everything going on with the Tennessee Vols. It's Blaine and Mickey on 104.5 The Zone.